Let me see. If I remember correctly, back in the year 2022, on December 24th, I gave a sermon entitled Punishments in Israel. The only thing I was feeling a little funny this morning, and now I guess I can see why. I guess, this is crazy. Let me take a drink here. The only explanation is that I've been sent back to your time, which is going to be weird to you, I guess, to give a follow-up message at the end of 2022, did you say? To help you understand what's going to happen in the coming years. Because, well, we know this, messages from the future can help us to prepare for our lives today. Maybe it is kind of fitting that you get this message today before we go into, before you go into 2023. Well, here we go. Here are some prophecies that will help you to prepare for next year, the year after that, the year after that. It's obvious that you need to understand this today. And so I can tell you that this is exactly what's going to happen. This is exactly what's going to happen. And it's my privilege and it's my duty to inform you of these things. I mean, even though you already know, most of you do, but some don't. Some haven't been around as long as others. And for those of you looking at the passages that you have in your laps, then, yeah, you know these things. And it's good. It's all good. It's, you know, okay, I'm getting back into it now. But I don't want you to be confused. Understanding Bible prophecy is somewhat of a skill. It's somewhat of an art. But it's also not the be-all, end-all, because there are more important things, like your personal conduct and your walk with God. That's, you know, a lot more important. Your contact with God, your prayer and your study, and your relationship with one another. And it seems to me from memory that at the end of 2022 and projected into 2023, you heard some messages from Mr. Horchak about love and about taking care of one another. So don't be confused. And as it says in Luke 21:36, this very thing in one of the most pivotal chapters of all Bible prophecy in the Olivet prophecy, that watch therefore and pray always. When I came to the Church of God, there was a premium put on watching and understanding and knowing where we stood in Bible prophecy. And as it turns out, going back, well, now more than 50 years, we really kind of didn't even know where we stood in terms of Bible prophecy, yet we, at that time, thought we did. And I kind of liken that to Paul's instruction to the Thessalonians and to the Corinthians and about and to several other peoples that he had gone to and ministered to, that thought the time of the end was very close for them as well. So maybe for those people who have lived and died, or, you know, lived and died during that 50 years ago or 60 years ago, the understanding of what they knew about Bible prophecy was probably a good thing. Can we all agree on that? It was probably good for them to be on alert, as you should as well during this time, understanding always that watching is good. Your own spiritual condition is the premium thing here to watch. And you have to evaluate yourself. And I mean, the Bible tells us to evaluate ourselves all the time. So that's your responsibility. So God gives you the opportunity to evaluate yourself, to watch your spiritual condition, and also to understand the things that are contained in this chapter and the things that we will be talking about. And then, of course, pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Well, the premium, first of all, is understanding your own spiritual condition, being close to God. And if you do that, then you're pretty certainly going to escape some of the things that are difficult and awful and, you know, kind of difficult to talk about from time to time, and complex as well. So I guess it's not exactly winging it, you know, but I guess this is meant for you today. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 7 says, "But the end of all things is at hand." So even to the people that Peter spoke to, the dispersed 10 tribes that were up in northern Cappadocia on the edge of the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, he was telling those people, "But the end of all things is at hand. Therefore, be serious and watchful in your prayers, and above all things, have fervent love for one another." So that's really what is most important. Academic knowledge is good, and you should have it. You really should have it. You've got it there in front of you. You've got the Bible there. You should understand the Bible. You should make that your goal. If, you know, indeed what you're saying is true, this is the end of 2022, hard to believe, then you should make that as one of your goals for the next calendar year, to understand the Bible more perfectly. Well, as I remember, I had defined prophecy in a very broad scope on December 24th, 2022. By five, I don't know if I came up with this name, but I'll just call them that, five pillars of prophecy. Five pillars of prophecy, and on 24th of December 2022, I explained one of the things that must happen are the removal of God's blessings or the punishments in modern Israel. Israel is Jacob, Joseph, Ephraim, Manasseh, all of those folks. Yeah, I don't care what anybody says. It's the English-speaking peoples of the world. And if that is offensive to somebody, then just deal with it, because that's who they are. But we can, hopefully, during the last few years of your life, you have been able to see that those things have actually happened. There's been a dynamic change within those nations especially. Where they were once the bastions of freedom, slowly but surely it is turning and it's changing. And it's changing in this nation as well, the United States. It's happened a lot more. Virtually, when you look at, if you look at the end of your calendar year in 2022, where you are now, if you evaluate the last 3 years or so, you cannot come up with any other conclusion other than things have changed dramatically for the worse. You haven't felt the full effect of them, but the world will feel the full effect of them as time goes on. They definitely will. That's what prophecy says. If you don't see the demise in the power of Israel, I mean, look, this is not hard, but I can remember back to the time, and this is just right in your present day. When you have a cabinet in the United States, I've got dozens of examples I could give you, but when you get a cabinet in, or cabinet level or cabinet level type individuals who make a mockery of gender confusion, or they actually are the greatest exhibits of gender confusion, and it's a part of an administration and an executive administration where you've got men dressing up as women and they are in sensitive cabinet-like or very, very close to cabinet-like positions. It's like clown world. Richard Levine, with long hair, dressing up as a woman, transgender, and just, and in some several other instances, such as in Australia, you take a look at the people who are the ministries of health, they're anything but the picture of health. anything but the picture of health, and they are dictating to you what you should do. It's such an obvious big lie and an affront to you as a citizen and to the citizens of Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, with maybe a few exceptions of people standing up, as I remember during that time. But the English-speaking peoples of the planet are key to understanding what's going to happen everywhere else, and everybody else in the world has just grown so accustomed to the United States and English-speaking peoples basically setting the pace, understanding what constitutions are and what laws for individuals are and the protection of liberties and laws and all that sort of thing. And those are the nations that are kind of leading towards tyranny. If you examine Canada, a tyrant is in charge of Canada. A tyrant is in charge of New Zealand and Australia and even in Great Britain. They've landed up there somehow. They've landed in those sensitive positions, but they do not espouse the individual freedoms that made those nations great. Along with the demise of the power of those people, the other four pillars are in, and I think probably in this order to be understood, that's why we'll cover them today. The rise of a powerful Europe, the rise of a powerful church centered in Europe, and events in the Middle East, and especially Jerusalem. So let's now take a look at this second of five pillars. Second of five pillars. In 553 BC, the prophet Daniel woke up from a terrifying dream. It was horrifying to him. He saw far into the future, and what he saw was absolutely horrific. It shook him, and it was very real to him. I'm sure that most of us have had a dream every so often in which things are so real we thought that, well, that actually happened, and we're so glad that we woke up and it didn't happen. In most cases, that those kind of dreams that are like that, well, Daniel woke up from such a dream. He saw events hundreds and thousands of years into the future. It was nightmarish. It was vision. It was vivid. It was so totally real. And when we read Daniel 7, we also become eyewitnesses to almost 2,500 years of history until the present time. So as we read in Daniel 7, verses 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, that's 553 BC, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. And Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven were stirring up the great sea. I don't know. It's not definitive, but some commentaries bring out, and it could be right, it could be wrong, but interesting observations by some in terms of their Bible scholarship. It's not setting a doctrine or anything, but some feel that this influence, the winds stirring up the great sea, are demonic in nature. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. Now, verses 4 through 7, you can look those up a little bit later, describe four world-ruling empires. They should be on a sheet that you've got. I'm going to take a chance here. There it is, right where I left it. Wow. And you'll see that this is noted on the left-hand column over here, and it mentions this nice little handy reference. Years ago, my sister-in-law, Bonnie Buchanan, helped clean this up, filled in a few of the things that didn't really come across so much in the old booklet. So verses 4 through 7 describe four world-ruling kingdoms that would be successive in the ancient world: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. And we're not the only ones who come up with this. You can pick up some, many of you have gotten an Unger's or a Haley's Bible handbook, and they both have it right. Both of their handbooks show that this is world successive empires in order, one after another, all the way up from Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and then finally Rome. So the last one would have 10 horns, and these horns are noted in verses 7 and verse 23. So if you want to scramble and take down notes from the notes that you have, then you can read those. And they're described in verse 24. The 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue 3 kings. So there would be 10 successive kingdoms that would come from this last kingdom, and another shall, and which is beat, which is this beast, as it's called, a beast, which was Rome. So the question is, can you trace 10 kingdoms through history to the present time? And the answer is no, you can't. But you can trace 9. You can trace 9. You can trace 9 to the time of Italian unification. I think you'll find that on the bottom right-hand side. And then finally, ending up with Hitler and World War II. There's a joke that goes around that says, everything ends up with Hitler. It doesn't really, but that brings us to the modern day. There is yet one horn to appear, one last head of a Roman Empire, but it could not assume that identity of being a world-ruling kingdom, being a major world-ruling kingdom, if America is still the only world-ruling kingdom. And I think it's generally acknowledged that it has been the single greatest superpower in the history of the earth. But nothing lasts forever. And we see the demise of that kingdom, that power of the United States of America, which succeeded the British Empire as being the most powerful nation. But for a period of about 300 years, there's really been no other major powers. Now, we didn't live in the 19th century, so, you know, everything that came before us, and most of you didn't live very long, if you're the oldest among us, you didn't live very long prior to World War II. So for most of us, the vast majority of us, the world-ruling kingdom of the British Empire is just something we read in history books. We didn't really experience it. But they came to power and influence first, because Jacob laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, who was the youngest one. And it's just kind of a symbol as you look at what's happened, that they rose first and then Manasseh. Two different boys, two different types of kingdoms, as explained in Genesis 49. So here we are, or here you are in your modern day. Expect the inevitability of the demise of American dominion of world events. It's really kind of a joke now. What is happening before our eyes? What has happened in the last couple of years? Withdrawal of Afghanistan, even all those other wars in the Middle East, such a sham and such a waste, such a needless enterprise. We kind of all sold a bill of goods that all of that had to be restructured, made democratic, imposing American will in the Middle East, et cetera, et cetera. We can see now that it was just really kind of a shameful expenditure of funds and resources, and didn't really do any good at all. Hasn't benefited anyone. Just been ridiculous. Which, if we can see this, and if you can see this, then certainly the nations of the world see this. And although that most of us have been very patriotic and supportive of the United States of America and thinking we're there to establish and help freedom, and I'm not saying that no good hasn't been done, it obviously has been done, helped a lot of peoples, but a lot of bad things as well. But where does it end up? Once the United States falls, it ends up in tyranny. Now we're, as Americans, we are very, very fortunate. We haven't lived under tyrannical circumstances. We have no idea what it's like. But we're going to find out. It ends up in tyranny. And that's the way most of the world has lived for most of its history until the British Empire came about, until 1776 in the United States. People lived in tyranny. This nation threw off tyranny. And they didn't think it was a benevolent, tyrannical imposition of power by the by the British. It was a hard-fought victory to get out from under tyranny. So this description of four world ruling kingdoms is also found in Revelation chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. Now, before you read that, the final horn or final kingdom is not to be confused with what is found in Revelation 17 and verse 12, where there are 10 further rulers mentioned along with the beast power, who receive their power along with the beast, but we won't get into that today. But John says, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, his feet were like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority." Somebody commented to me that the beast, the picture of this beast on our book of Revelation unveiled, couldn't you have a happy dragon on there? Why does it have to be so horrifying looking? Which I thought was funny, but because it is a horrifying, menacing message. It is satanic. It's not Puff the Magic Dragon, I'm sorry. It doesn't work like that. When John saw this beast rise out of the sea, also in a vision, the same sea which Daniel saw four winds stir up, the same great sea, he must have thought, I've read about this before. Because it had all the attributes of the early beasts of Daniel 7, lion, bear, leopard, and so on. So this beast, we find, is both a kingdom and a man. The man is synonymous with that kingdom that arises up. And where will he come from? People have been looking for this beast, this leader, to arise for many, many years. Well, let me give you a little hint. If history is your guide, I can't be too specific because you probably watch some science fiction shows, right? We don't want to disturb the time-space continuum. So I'll just give you this. Where will this individual come from? Well, if history is any guide, he will be, and not that everyone who comes from this area of the world is bad. Of course they're not. He will be Germanic. So it's not that it's all that important for you to be isolating on Germany right now and trying to figure out, like we did years ago, an identification of the strong man of Bavaria, Franz Joseph Strauss, who we thought would be the leader who would unite Europe and Germany and everything else. But if history is our guide, he will be German, just like all the individuals that you note Let's see. On the far right-hand column of this chart that apparently you have, beginning with the second half with the imperial restoration by Justinian. Because every single one of these individuals that are mentioned on the chart, Justinian, Charlemagne, Otto, Charles, even Napoleon, and then all the way up to Hitler, were of German descent. Yep. Napoleon was of Germanic descent. His family was from the northern part of Italy, which was settled by the Lombards or German tribes. So that's where he came from. So it's not important that you memorize or perfectly align this chart that you have, but it's just a aid. It's just a help. Just an aid to help you to understand, because the time of freedom that the world is living in now is coming to an end. And you've had a taste of it in your time. Epidemic, shutdown, autocratic rules, lies and deception. It's like whenever you see a public official getting up and telling you what to do, you'd be better off doing exactly the opposite of what they tell you. But of course, then they mandate it, and then they enforce it, and then there's almost nothing you can do about it except be subject to it. But these people are liars, as have been proven countless times again. I said I wasn't going to mention names in 12, 24, 31, and I won't today. But they've been caught in so many lies as they try to ruin your life with things they create, things they spring on the public. And this is well known by now. I mean, only the most oblivious of individuals do not understand, even in 2022, that A, there was a virus that was created, and it was created in our scientific labs. You know, Fort Detrick, Maryland, University of North Carolina, and then all of that was transferred over to the Wuhan lab. And then I guess you could debate whether it was done deliberately or not. But it's ready to go. All of this was basically war planned, and they're war planning more. Because he's such a public figure, I think I can mention his name. There's a bunch of these leaders like Bill Gates recently, in your time, that got together a couple of weeks ago in Belgium to war game another scenario in which an even deadlier, menacing virus would be unleashed upon mankind. And they got together, and, you know, it's amazing. It's truly amazing. They even hired news announcers to broadcast this, or, you know, do a fake and dummy news show, just like they did back in 2015, before previous coronavirus was released. So most of these people are just absolute liars. They're evil people, and it's like, why do they do what they do? It's like they can't help themselves because they want, the only explanation you can come up with is they want the adulation for letting you know in advance that they're responsible. That's psychotic. That's mentally disturbed. And of course, the scripture that I don't have here today for you is one that you can easily look up in 2 Timothy 3. Evil men will get worse and worse. Okay, they're bad. They're really, really bad in all facets of life, leadership positions. And they do bad things, and then they get away with it. And so they're emboldened to do it more, and they do it more and more and more. This is what killers do. This is what psychotic people do. So this will happen. In your time now, some of the things that we're discussing today are not reality. And so it takes faith to be able to understand that the Bible means what it says and that it's going to happen. So you've had a taste of all of these things that limit freedoms and abilities, and sure. But it's going to be such that a more powerful government is going to displace the freedoms, and there will be a new world premier power. Now, it doesn't seem to be on the scene yet. It just doesn't. But some of the auspices of it even seem to be present within our own society and within English-speaking peoples of the globe. If history is our guide to the fulfillment of prophecy, Daniel and John received a vision of a terrifyingly super powerful world government that will once again rise in Europe. Now, think about it. Since the inception of the common market in the 1950s, and despite the grandiose dreams of all of these individuals who have wanted to recapture the illustrious, glorious civilization of Europe and make Europe strong after World War II, and they have been doing everything possibly in their own power to do it, even coming up with a currency which is now failing, along with all the other major currencies, but the euro. But a beautiful flag with all these stars on it, what is it, 13 or whatever. But all of these things that they have done to bring Europe to unification, how's that worked out so far? It hasn't. In 2024, Europe, which is right next door, by the way, to Ukraine and then to Russia, has done very, very little to react to something that everybody says is such a huge crisis. So what they've done on their own really hasn't worked for 60, 70 years now. So what's the change? In Revelation chapter 13, when you get a chance, read through verses 4 and 8, because it describes a terrifying time in which the entire world worships this newly arisen kingdom, absolutely worships it and the individual, and it's imbued with the power of the devil. That's what these verses say, and it's going to blaspheme and make war upon the saints. Now, how does one blaspheme God? Well, by appropriating his power and claiming his authority. But it doesn't appear to be on the horizon yet. So what might be a trigger? That's not clear. But Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40 gives kind of a clue, because it says, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. Who's that? The king of the south? Well, we know that it's got to be south of Europe. We know the king of the south anciently has been kingdoms, you know, in and around the Holy Land, quote unquote, but there is absolutely nothing to suggest a king of the south now. We don't know where it'll come from. We don't know if it'll come from Egypt, if it'll come from Iran, Iraq, various other nations. Will it be a group of nations? Will there be one individual, one great Islamic leader? We don't know. So all of that remains to be fulfilled, but it says that he's going to attack him, that is, the king of the north. So there's got to be a king of the north. All of this that is mentioned in Revelation has to come about prior to this, and there has to be some kind of situation, and the Bible's just not clear on that. So you're just going to have to wait. I can't even tell you. You're just going to have to wait. So we don't know who the king of the south is. Some people thought, well, maybe it's Iran. Yeah. We don't know. The Bible's not clear as to what causes the conflict that is described here, but you'll remember that in Daniel 12 and verse 11 that it indicates there will be a time in Jerusalem where there will be a daily sacrifice. Why would they have a daily sacrifice? maybe because of the King of the South, maybe because of other difficulties surrounding the modern state of Israel. And then we do know what is pretty clear is that an abomination, a modern abomination, will take place. Luke mentions it. Matthew refers to it. Army surrounding Jerusalem. The withdrawing of these daily sacrifices taken away for a period of, well, it seems as though from that time until the time of Christ's return, apparently there's about 1,290 days or 3 years and 7 months at that time, not setting dates. So what gives? Zechariah 12 and verse 2 may give us a clue as to what could be the underlying problem or difficulty, because the prophet says, "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of drunkenness to all the surrounding peoples when they lay siege against Judah and Jerusalem." Why would they do that? Well, Jerusalem has always been the desired place in the Middle East, and maybe that is what elicits a response from this great and final beast power that arises out of Europe. Now notice in Revelation 13, verses 11 through 15, we've got the beast. You see, the whole world worships that beast that rises out of the great sea, the Mediterranean Sea. But then John says, "I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb." Well, looks like a lamb, speaks like a dragon. So it looks apparently like Christ, but it's not Christ. It's the devil. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. So there's an absolute worship, bowing down, worshiping, giving homage as if it's godly in nature, this governmental system that arises out of the great sea, whose deadly wound was healed. Happened hundreds of years ago. He performs great signs so that even he makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell in the earth by the signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not to worship the image of the beast and to be killed. You know, the Roman Empire was defeated hundreds of years ago, death blow given to it. But then it came back in Europe, came back in the center of Europe under the auspices of the Holy Roman Empire. But getting back to the description of this particular other beast, can you imagine this kind of power, which will be greater than military might, making fire come down from heaven? Can you imagine a time like that? That's what the Bible says is going to happen. Now, this is also pictured exactly like this in Daniel 7. Verses 21 and 25. In each case, this horn or this beast persecutes the people of God. That's what it's responsible for. And that's historically what this type of government, this church, has done from the time that we're speaking of now in our current current Bible study in the book of Revelation with the persecution of the true church of God. That's what this government, that's what it's, one of its claim to fame is, persecuting true Christians, true people of God through history. So this beast, like the previous one that is mentioned, this little horn that is also a symbol of a government, is also a man and represents a kingdom. So with history as our guide, where might he come from? Now, every time there is another election, somebody says, could this be the last pope? Some funny stories from the past on that one, but we'll go into that now. It's not going to be somebody from Poland. It's not going to be somebody from South America. It will very likely be someone of Italian descent, just as this chart shows. Every one of the popes who had an alliance with the Holy Roman Empire was Italian. All of them. So it's not a guarantee. You'll have to watch, but don't get too excited about a new election or a new individual being chosen until he begins to exercise some of these powers. Then you'll know. This man, whoever he is going to enforce edicts of the church, and he's going to have the power of the state to do it. Now, even the mild Pope John Paul, who many years ago was a very gentle man that came to power about the same time as Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, and seemed to want to do good. He was from Poland. I found this in an old newspaper clipping of a speech and an edict that he gave. But he didn't really have the power of the state to enforce it then, see? Maybe he was an honorable man, maybe he was a good man. This is what he wrote in one of his, edicts or whatever, I don't know. Whoever denies a truth which must be believed with divine and Catholic faith, or who calls into doubt, or who totally repudiates the Christian faith and does not retract after having been legitimately warned, is to be punished as a heretic or an apostate with major excommunication. A cleric, moreover, can be punished with other penalties, not excluding deposition. You don't want to be deposed by this power. It doesn't end well. So he had also included within this edict that it was the right of the church to enforce the keeping of Sunday, the first day of the week. But they didn't have the power of the state behind them then. But let's not forget, the whole world is going to worship that state function, and both of these states are going to be worshipped, and they'll both be imbued with the power of the devil, the god of this world. Now let's move in further exploring this individual, this other little horn, this other beast, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 1. Many years ago, there were a lot of controversies surrounding this, and hopefully we're over that now. Should I say, hopefully you're over that now. Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Now, you may, in your study later, read chapter 5 of the previous chapter to see that he instructed them regarding Jesus' return. And I'm going to interject at this point the similarity with the instruction in the Olivet Prophecy in Matthew 24 and verse 22. It says, unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Now, some have interpreted this verse incorrectly through the years also. They have made the determination that somehow or another the scheduling of God's plan, or that the whatever happens during the time of the end, is going to be shortened to some extent because of this word shortened. So let's get this straight. Let's understand this. There will be no shortening of the determined period of time that God knows from the beginning is going to take place. What it means is that he is going to simply intervene at the correct time, because if he didn't intervene with the return of Jesus Christ at the correct time, no flesh would be saved. But what is done is done. And what will happen is going to happen. And the time periods that are mentioned in Daniel and the book of Revelation, 42 months, 3.5 years, 1,290 days, 1,335 days, although we may not know exactly, you may not know exactly how to order them or configure them at this particular time, that schedule will always remain. The ultimate end of God not intervening in this world would result in total destruction of mankind. So it's not that God is going to narrow the time frame, cut it short in that sense, because he already knows how much time is allotted for man's activities, and he knows when Christ will return. Moving forward to verse 23, then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, do not believe it, for false Christs, false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Therefore, the need for everyone to stay close to God from this moment on. See, I have told you beforehand. Therefore, if they say to you, look, he's in the desert, don't go out, or look, he is in the rooms, do not believe it. So that coordinates very, very well with what Paul told the Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and continuing in verse 3. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. Wow, there's something a little bit new, but it's also mentioned in the Olivet Prophecies that the love of many could wax cold. Therefore, the importance of understanding love for one another and practicing that as a way of life, and as a matter of fact, to all mankind as much as is possible as well. So this again presents a conundrum, a falling away. So it doesn't say great falling away, but it says falling away. So we've all been warned. We've all been warned. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. There are a lot of misunderstandings, which I won't go into, that happened a long time ago. But that was not fulfilled in the 90s within the Church of God. This is talking about the Middle East. This is talking about Jerusalem. This is talking about somebody that will ascend to a throne of his own choosing, apparently, and will go there and will be claiming to be God. He's one of the individuals that is mentioned in Revelation 19 as being the false prophet who will be thrown into the lake of fire after Jesus return. But this is the blasphemy of the beast and the false prophet claiming to be God, claiming to be God's representatives, and doing all the things that it says in Daniel 7, changing times, been thought about before. But this will surely be what Luke says will be the abomination that makes desolate. So if their daily sacrifices that take place sometime in the future and those things are removed because there's a crisis or a time of crisis in Jerusalem or the Middle East or Israel, is the modern nation of Israel is threatened to some degree, then this may be one of the reasons, along with the movement of the King of the South in Daniel 11:40 moving against the King of the North, for them to move their headquarters and claim that Jesus Christ has already returned. This will lead to the heresy that God has returned to earth already. And the false prophet will attempt to show that God's kingdom is now on earth. Maybe he'll even go to the Mount Olivet and stand on it. Maybe he'll do wonderful signs or horrible signs and wonders at that time. Picking up in verse 5, do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? And now you know what is restraining, that he may be revealed in his own time. Paul is just saying that God has restrained all of this. It's not going to happen just now. It's being restrained at this particular time. For the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. It was happening then in the first century. As you read through the books of the New Testament, you can see that the mystery of lawlessness was already happening. A false gospel was already developing. It was being promulgated in Galatians in opposition to the true gospel and many other areas. Only he who now restrains will do so until he is taken out of the way. God is restraining this from happening until the right time. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. I highly recommend a modern translation like the New King James Version for reading this. If you have and you're stuck with your old King James Version, this passage of Scripture is more clearly understood in modern languages and modern translations. Very difficult in the King James Version, although I'm not going to cover that now. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them a strong delusion that they should believe the lie. Now, how does God send a strong delusion? It's probably better rendered by some of the modern translations like the New Life Version, which says, for this reason, God will allow them to follow false teaching so that they will believe a lie. There's going to be massive, massive deception that takes place on the earth at that particular time, and that is not even on the horizon. You can't even see it happening. Only you really know that these things are going to happen on the earth because you have some advanced knowledge. You don't see a powerful Europe about to arise. You don't see a powerful church about to arise. You don't see these events in the Middle East. Your only guide is to understand this broad outline that is given in the Bible. Verse 12, that they all might be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Such is the nature of deception and lying and deceit, evil men, seducers, waxing worse and worse. Now, the brief outline I've given you today will happen. It's going to affect all of us and all of you. So this is really an overview, and the details will be filled in at the correct time. We'll enter into a transitional time unlike any in history. So the point of giving advance information is to be forewarned, right? Is to be adept in understanding what is actually going to happen in the future. It doesn't really matter whether we believe it or not. And getting all the details right, memorizing this, not essential. It's a guide. But it is important as to how we live our daily lives and have our conduct ordered with God. But we are definitely entering into the time when I know many of you are wondering what's going to happen next in our nation. Well, you know what's going to happen, generally speaking, so don't be surprised when the difficulty that I've mentioned and maybe ad-libbed a little bit on today begins to happen even more and more, because evil is increasing more and more every day because it's not corrected. It's not challenged. And no matter what your beliefs, society-wise, you need to really look at this aspect of the deception, the lying that is taking place. It's going to get so much worse that when it ends up with lying signs and wonders that will compel people and force people to obey and will be so deceptive that rationally right-minded people will just give into it, then you're not going to be surprised. Verse 13, but we are bound to give thanks to God always for you, Now, after this horrifying vision that Paul gave of the man of sin and this unrighteousness that is going to take place in all the world, notice how he closes. I think it's for our benefit. We are bound to give thanks to God always for you, brethren, beloved by the Lord, because God from the beginning chose you for salvation. I couldn't say it better. I mean, I can just repeat the words. No way I can say it better, but I say the same thing about you. Thank God for you, because God has chose you for salvation through sanctification by the Spirit and belief in the truth, to which he called you by our gospel for the obtaining of the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, stand fast, hold the traditions which you were taught, whether by word or our epistle. Now may our Lord Jesus Christ himself and our God and Father, who loved us and has given us everlasting consolation and good hope by grace, comfort your hearts and establish you in every good work, a word and work. None of us, and certainly not me, have much experience with whatever time-space continuum that I have entered to be with you here today, but all I can say is that these passages are true. You know they're true. You'll have to wait for all the details to unfold, but that's okay. Just focus on the scriptures. Do some study. Consult a chart for history if you like, but mainly, as Mark 13, Luke 21 tell us, we must watch and pray. And finally, 1 Peter 4 and verse 17 says that the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? Well, we know. The prophecy shows us what's going to be the end of those that don't believe the gospel. But brethren, I'm glad to be with you here today. Coming from where I'm coming from, it's time to be on high alert, because the only protection that we have is the comfort and safety of God and his Son, Jesus Christ. Watch and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all this that will come to pass.